Good morning, Homer and Lower Kenai Peninsula. Hey, Kachemak Bay. This is the coffee table. You're tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. The time is 9:03 a.m. And the topic this morning is the KPC Kenai Peninsula College Showcase Series, because there is an event happening next, well, it's this evening and next Wednesday. And let's see if Dave Acheson is on the line to help us talk about it. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Wonderful. And before I get right to you, Dave, I want to check, is Sue Mauger on the line? Sue?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hi, Sue. And I want to get to, Sue Mauger is the science and executive director at Cook Inlet Keeper. Dave Acheson is the KPC Showcase Series coordinator, but you've got a little more going on than that this evening, I think. Can you start off, Dave Acheson, with just a brief introduction of who you are and what you do, and then introduce the KPC Showcase Series? How long has it been going on? What is it?
Sure, you bet. I'm the evening program coordinator at the Soldotna campus, and I've done the KPC Showcase for, probably most of the 19 years I've been at the college. It probably started 40 years ago. Gene Brockle, the director of the wife of the original director.
Clayton
of
Brockle?
KPC.
Was it Clayton Brockle who was the original
director?
Yeah,
Clayton.
He was
Clayton's
awesome.
Wife started it.
Yeah.
And she was getting tired of doing it, and I took it over. And it's had many iterations over the years, so...
Right, it's been a variety of things. We're going to be focused, you're going to be focused tonight and next Wednesday night on fisheries, but it's really, the topics are open. Whatever is of interest in what the college feels like pursuing through discussion, right?
You bet, and we've done arts, we've had music... we had a virtual comedy night this year. We did a book event virtually. Doing virtual events is a new thing, which is a lot of challenge, you know, very challenging.
We're all getting a lot of practice, though.
Yeah. So hopefully tonight's will go well. This is a big event. There's already, 50, 60 people signed up.
Oh, great. But you've got room for more, right?
Oh, yeah, we can do up to 300 with the way we have it set up.
Great. So can you talk about what the event is tonight and next Wednesday? Sort of a general description of what the show is tonight, what the presentation is tonight.
Sure. It's a two-part series, as you said. And it's called A Changing Kenai Peninsula, Climate Change's Impact on the Future of Hunting and Fishing, where we are, how we got here, and where we might be heading. And so it's such a big topic. We divided it into two nights, and tonight's fisheries, and next Wednesday will be wildlife. And it starts at 6 p.m.
Go ahead.
Tonight what we'll do is we've got some local folks before the scientists take over, and Hope Roberts, who owns a charter company in Prince William Sound, Brent Johnson, who's on the assembly, but he's lived here his whole life and is a longtime Cook Inlet commercial fisher, probably his whole adult life, and myself. I've written books about fishing and lifelong sport fisher. And we're going to talk about, the changes we've seen. I've been in the area for about 40 years. So we'll talk about the changes we've seen anecdotally before we turn it over to the scientists.
And the scientists, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, well, their talk is Kenai Peninsula Fisheries in a Time of Change, Historic Trends, Glimpses of the Future, and Strategies for Building Resilience.
And Sue Mauger, Science Executive Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, is one of those scientists. The other, I'm going to let her introduce herself in just a moment. The other person she's in conversation with is Dr. Eric Schoen from University of Alaska Fairbanks, a fisheries biologist. So, Sue, when you introduce yourself to the people, I just feel like everybody knows you, but if for the purposes of the show, if you might briefly introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Kathleen. I am the science and executive director here at Keeper. I've been here 20 years and have had the great pleasure of those years, a lot of it spent out on our salmon streams and trying to learn about them, learning how they change throughout the year, and then probably most significantly how they've changed over the years. And so I'm very happy to be part of the showcase conversation tonight, although when you think about it, there's probably thousands and thousands of people we could have invited to be part of the conversation, because Alaskans are very connected to their fisheries and all have opinions and experiences to share. So I'm hoping that what we can offer tonight is a conversation starter among people in their homes as they listen, but also to bring it into the public space for future conversations, because I think that there's a lot to talk about.
So Sue, can you, I'm not expecting you to summarize your plans for the evening, but can you talk a little bit about the format for your part of the evening tonight? Are you and Dr. Schoen in conversation? Or are you making separate presentations? What's going to happen tonight?
Sure. So Eric and I have been in conversation for years. We've worked on some projects together, and he's been part of my sort of collaborative team over the years that have been thinking about how our streams are changing. And tonight it's going to be, Eric's going to introduce us and talk about some of the broader changes that we're seeing on the peninsula and across Alaska, and bring us down to a he'll show a little video that we put together related to a project we did looking at how our freshwater systems are changing and how that might relate to the decline in Chinook salmon that we've seen in Cook Inlet. And then I'll take over from there and talk a little bit about what we can do, like how we think about that, like, because I know a lot of us are aware of the changes, and the question is, well, what's there to do about it? And so I'd like to offer some thoughts on that and kind of hopefully trigger some good questions and conversation within the virtual platform.
Oh, good. That was my next question, is will there be an opportunity for people who are participating to talk back, to ask you guys questions or for clarifications and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think Dave will help us with the moderating of that. But, you know, one thing that we're learning in the virtual space is that that everyone has equal access to the chat, the chat room, and the opportunity to ask questions. So it's not just the loudest voice in the room or person who gets their hand up first, that, you know, everyone can ask questions in that space. And then you have a moderator that can help compile them and bring them forward. So it's a great platform for doing that. So I don't know if Dave wants to add anything there.
Yeah, Dave, it seems like all our new virtual and Zoom meetings and such, it seems like in some ways it's a boon to public participation. But of course there is there's the gate you have to get through. You have to have good enough wireless. You have to have internet connection. You have to have good enough wireless so that you can really connect. But there will be an opportunity for people who are participating or listening in to participate in the conversation as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. And what we'll do is we'll have them, they can ask questions in the chat, and then the moderators, myself and Amber Sweetland, who's helping me, will ask the questions if they don't want to, you know, we'll be able to put people on. They won't be able to just speak and ask questions unless they say they have a question, or they can just type their question in and we can ask it. So it can be either way.
Okay. And this would be the time when I tell you that you can ask questions of Sue Mauger and Dave Acheson by calling 235-7721. And we will We'll get your questions into the studio. You can either ask it in person, we'll send you in through the board, or Josh is standing by and he can just write your question down and send it in. So Dave, there are a couple other things to let people know about for tonight. One of which is that you're going to be making a recording. So I definitely want to invite people to participate tonight and be a part of it. But the next two coffee tables will be the fisheries next Wednesday, the fisheries conversation that's taking place tonight. And then next week, there is the wildlife conversation. And so we'll also get the recording of that, you know, fingers crossed, and air it on the following Wednesday so that anyone who can't participate tonight and next Wednesday night will be able to at least hear an edited version of what went on. Can you talk a little bit of a preview before we get back to Sue about the second Wednesday, the next time, the wildlife topic?
Yeah, and that will start at 6 p.m. as well. There's a separate registration process for it. And that will feature Dr. John Morton, who recently retired from the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. He was the lead biologist there. And he's going to talk about climate effects on moose, caribou, Sitka black-tailed deer on the Kenai Peninsula and Prince William Sound. And then Hope Roberts and Aaron Hsu, who are with the Chugach Regional Resources Commission, are going to talk about climate change and subsistence in the Chugach region. And so that'll be the presentation.
And that's
next Wednesday.
That's next Wednesday. This Wednesday, Sue Mauger's going to be there. And hey, Sue, oh, you've got that spaceship wine sound coming through again. I want to briefly ask you, a lot of what you were just talking about when you were setting this up was about salmon. Are you and Dr. Schoen focusing exclusively on salmon issues, local salmon issues?
Yeah, both Eric and I are freshwater ecologists, so we will be talking about the river systems, but that incorporates glaciers on down into our estuaries. So we'll kind of cover the whole landscape. I think Dr. Shane will be able to join us. He texted and said he'll be able to pop in here shortly. But one of the things that I'm really excited about in this kind of a format is to bring the science and the local experience and knowledge into the same space, because I think, you know, understanding what's happening from the science point of view or from that context is incredibly important because it helps us understand where we are as things are changing. But I think it's really important to be able to think about what that actually means for us in real life and how does that change how we think about food security and resilience. And so having the opportunity to have a conversation with science as a part of it, but to integrate that with the local experience, I think is really important. And I've been thinking go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to touch on that because there's a thing called like a nature threshold where different generations have a different view of what is natural. And I was talking to somebody yesterday about the changes in kingfishing over like 40 years, and they were somebody new to, has only been in Alaska for like 4 or 5 years, and they're astounded at how things have changed in 10 or 15 years. And then, like, if I talk to somebody who's like a homesteader who's been here 60 years, they've got a different threshold than I do because they're like, well, you should have seen it 60 years ago. And I think that's interesting and something to get across to different, generations that, the change is slow by human terms, even though it might be fast scientifically or geologically speaking.
Oh, thanks for that. Sue?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think to jump off of that idea is, something that we are living in right now, the word that I think I hear four times every news cycle is unprecedented, right? 2020 has been a very
a year
remarkable
of
year.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been rather shocking, and I think we're realizing a couple things. One, how quickly things can change, and two, I think we're all getting a deeper understanding about our own resilience and realizing that not everyone has the same ability to adapt and has enough, you know, security blankets around them to make rapid change not feel really unstabilizing. And I've been thinking a lot about what would have happened if the year of 2020 happened at the same time that the summer of 2019.
I've had that thought myself.
Yeah, the pressures of, you know, all of us, I think, are using, really appreciating our outside space, particularly this last year. But what if that had been full of smoke and had been not feeling like a super safe space? You know, where would we be thinking about us on our resilience spectrum? And would we have felt as able to manage that rapid change? And I think that's the challenge of being prepared for the future, is that it's unprecedented. It hasn't happened before, and we're gonna find ourselves in different combinations of stressors. And it's a really important time to think about, okay, so let's take stock of how we did in 2020. Where were our vulnerabilities, and how do we think about improving those so that when 2020 and 2019 intersect, we're going to feel a lot more comfortable about how we can navigate that together as the peninsula, and making sure we're taking care of everybody. So thinking about food security and thinking about all of our freezers that are full of all the bounty of the ocean and the landscape, I think it's really important to think about how does that look in the future? Can we expect the same things? Can we fish and hunt in the same ways?
Thanks, Sue. So how much of this, of what you're talking about tonight, is in line with the work you're doing at Cook and Let Keeper right now?
Well, so a lot of the work that Eric and I have done has really built on the 20 or so years of stream temperature work that we've done here at Cook and Let Keeper. And, you know, those long-term data sets are so precious as we try to understand how things are going to change in the future. And so, We had a paper that came out earlier this summer that really used that as a foundational piece of information to help us understand what it might look like both in the future, but also how it might help us understand why the Chinook have not been doing well over the last two or three decades, and whether there are freshwater components to that story. So I'm a big fan of investing in the long term, and I feel really fortunate to have been able to be in a place and in a job that's allowed me to collect, you know, decades of data consistently that can really help inform some of these bigger conversations.
Thanks. That's Sue Mauger, Science and Executive Director for Cook and Let Keeper. And also on the show this morning, it's Dave Acheson. Dave, you are, we have a treat for people later, which is that you are going to give a short reading, maybe even a long one if we're lucky, because you are a local author. And I feel like one of the things that Sue was just alluding to, you know, I was hoping we could cover this topic in, say, 30, 40 minutes, and then leave the rest of the time for a rousing sea story or something from one of your, either your latest book or one of your previous books. But that's coming in about 20 minutes. The next thing is that Dr. Shane is on the line. I believe, Dr. Shane, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning. Thanks so much for being on. Dr. Shane, whose name I've been pronouncing up until Sue just correct mispronouncing up until Sue just corrected me, is the other person on tonight with Sue in discussion, the scientist that she's been talking about up until this point. So thank you for calling in, Dr. Shane. And could you briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. I'm Eric Shane. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and fisheries biologist. I grew up in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage, and I work at UAF now up here in Fairbanks. Spent a lot of time on the Kenai for fun and a little bit of time for work, and it's a place near and dear to my heart. So it's going to be, I was sure appreciated the invite from Dave to talk to the KPC forum. And we're going to, tonight we're going to be talking about how climate change affects fishing on the Kenai. And I'm going to come in with a little bit broader view to talk about what the science tells us about how climate change is affecting salmon in Alaska more broadly. And then I'll tailor that message to the Kenai, and in particular thinking about the Kenai River and salmon in the Kenai River. So yeah, I guess what the kind of the broad strokes of what we'll be talking about are how the climate has been changing on the Kenai, how it's been affecting the landscape, and then how our salmon populations and our fisheries have been changing. And then we'll tie in some of the most cutting-edge research from folks at USGS and the University of Washington, and our collaborators at the University of Alaska and Sioux, where we'll be looking at how changes in temperature are actually affecting Alaskan salmon, as far as heat stress responses, as far as population responses, and how salmon move across their landscape to take advantage of the diversity in temperature and in food and other resources to try and kind of make the best, travel throughout river basins to find the best conditions in any given year.
And how much in line with your work at the University of Alaska Fairbanks? That's where you're based, right?
Right, yep.
And how does all of this, like, I was just asked Sue the same question. The work you're doing, what's the work you're doing right now that may not relate to this or may relate to this evening's discussion?
Yeah, so Sue and I and several others just published a paper this summer looking at how climatic changes in freshwater, in particular, especially fall flooding and hot, dry summers, how that's been affecting king salmon runs in the Cook Inlet Basin, including the Kenai and Mat-Su. So we'll talk about that tonight. That just came out. And we have some ongoing research. Most of my field work these days is on the Chena River, which flows right through Fairbanks here. It's one of the biggest king salmon-producing tributaries of the whole Yukon River Basin. So the biggest producing tributary is the Salcher River, which is just down the Richardson Highway. And the Chena is number two within the American portion of the Yukon. And we're looking at how climate, in particular changes in stream flow and changes in temperature, are affecting juvenile king salmon growth. So we catch a lot of baby salmon and measure them and weigh them, and we're seeing where they move, what habitats they like in a warm, dry year versus a rainy, wet year. And then this last summer, we had this opportunity in 2019. There was a huge fire year across the whole state, and we had two big forest fires that happened in the Chena River Basin. They basically split the core salmon habitat, into a reach that was affected by fire downstream, these two fires, and there was a comparison reach just upstream that was unaffected by these fires. So we were looking at doing a bunch of field work, trying to see how those fires were affecting temperatures in the river, food, so bugs, and changes in salmon growth. Oh, just yep. A second.
Go for it. I'm going to bring Sue back in. And Sue, while Dr. Shane is wrangling toddlers on the other end of the line, can you expand on that a little bit? I want to give people an understanding of what the body of the conversation will be between the two of you tonight. It sounds like it's pretty well covered. Am I leaving anything out that can entice people to participate tonight?
Well, I will be unveiling the first look at some new thermal imagery that Ooh. We had flown this summer. So this will be the first time I've shared some of the images. So this is imagery that was flown in July at the hottest part of our summer, flown from a helicopter. and it gives us a 2 foot by 2 foot scale picture of the temperature of the rivers. And so we did that on four tributaries up in the Central Peninsula. And we're looking for places where we can see really cold water, so places where groundwater springs are coming into the river, because as these rivers get warmer, those are going to become really important places for salmon as they move up and down the stream channel.
How so?
And so as if we have summers, as we anticipate, like 2019, as the salmon are trying to come back up into the rivers to spawn, they're going to hit a really warm river channel, and they'll hold out for a little while, and in the estuary, kind of waiting for that temperature signal to come down. And that often happens when you have rain or a break in the weather, and then they'll start to move upstream to spawning areas. But if you have summers like 2019, where it was hot for a very long time, it was very dry, so there was no rain to kind of knock that temperature spike off, then at some point, their biology is going to push them upstream. They need to go spawn. But if they have places along the river that are colder, they can use those as like cold water stepping stones to help them move up an otherwise warm channel. And so knowing where those locations are, and making sure that we as landowners and managers and people recreating don't affect those or change those cold water little faucets, then we can help. That's like a piece of the resilience story, is making sure that we keep those connections intact so that we can give the fish a fighting chance as things warm up.
Thanks, Sue. And Sue and Dr. Shane, feel free to jump in, but I want to switch to Dave for a minute and find out, the southern half of Cook Inlet will have a new fishery management plan in less than a month. And so I wondered if that's going to be a part of the conversation tonight.
I don't think we were planning on it, but if it came up, we might talk a little bit about it. I'm just kind of coming up to speed on it and been reading about it, it's pretty important for sure,
because it definitely affects drift fishing in Cook Inlet. It would bar it, I believe.
Yeah, one of the four plans, there's been a lot of pushback against that number four. There's like four different options.
Right, alternative four.
Yeah.
So maybe maybe that'll be on the list of things for conversation. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you back in, Dave, is because you're going to be a part of the first part of tonight's event. And it's really good to see commercial fishing interests and sport fishing interests talking together, because so often those two interests get pitted against each other for no good reason when they should be working together for the resource. And
yeah.
So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the goals for the discussion, the first part of the discussion tonight.
Well, I think we want to have a consensus and a way forward, because if there's no fish, then everybody's out of luck, whether you're commercial or sport. And it's too bad it's so divisive. And I think I've got a lot of friends who are guides, but like your average sport fisher, I don't think is, a lot of us have commercial fished as well. So it's less divisive, I think, between those two groups. But it's an ongoing question.
Okay, thanks for that. And Sue, I don't know if it would really affect you. If by chance the commercial fishing in Cook Inlet, in the southern part of Cook Inlet, ends, is there anything in that set of rules that are coming up that would affect your work?
Well, certainly the work that we do at Cook Inlet Keeper is really about trying to have a resilient watershed and really sustainable communities. And so the idea of losing our Cook Inlet commercial fleet is not something that we want to see. And so I'm interested to see how the conversation evolves around those four alternatives. We have submitted comments that does not support the idea of closing off the fisheries in Lower Cook Inlet. And, you know, we look to the habitat. You know, the work that we do is not about allocation. It's about having the habitat that will support all of the people, all that are interested in the fisheries. So although we don't get into those conversations very often, we would love to do what we can to support having thriving sport commercial subsistence fisheries in Cook Inlet, and that's really our goal.
Thanks. That's Sue Mauger, Science and Executive Director for Cook Inlet Keeper here in Homer. And Dr. Eric Shane, are you back? Okay.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen.
Oh, hey.
I'm back. Okay. I'll have to sign off in about a minute here.
Well, let's just wrap it up with you then and say thank you for calling in. Is there anything before you get back to your business at hand for the morning? is there anything that you want to say about the presentation this evening?
Yeah, I guess I would just say I think we're going to be trying to talk about where we are with the state of the science. And I think the broader message is one from the scientific community is one of, you know, kind of a clear-eyed, serious concern about what's going on with climate change. But there are also some area opportunity, and it's important for, I think, Alaskans in general, people on the Kenai in particular, to have our eyes open for those kind of the risks and the potential opportunities to capitalize on. And I think especially Sue, I'll be talking a little bit, and then Sue will be talking in particular about what we can do at the local level to help give our salmon a chance to keep thriving in a warming world.
Thank you.
So I will leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks, Dr. Eric Shane from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He will be participating in the discussion tonight. It's a Zoom discussion, a virtual discussion, through Kachemak Base, well, through the Soldotna campus of Kenai Peninsula College. Is that right, Dave? That's where you are.
Yeah, that's right. It's through there, but it's the wonders of virtual presentations, you can join from anywhere. And to get like a link, you can just go to kpc.alaska.edu, and right on the front page of the website is under events is this event, and there's a place to register.
Okay, I see it. I have gone to kpc.alaska.edu and then clicked on the KPC Showcase Changing Kenai Peninsula Part 1. And when you look at that, there's a link right there so you can get your Zoom information. And I just want to remind people that there's plenty of room for people to participate. You can just listen, or you can ask questions. And it's tonight at 6 p.m., where fisheries is the topic for discussion. And next Wednesday at 6 p.m., then local wildlife will be the topic for discussion. And Dave, are there specific goals you have for this conversation other than what do you hope to accomplish tonight?
Well, I think just broadening people's view, understanding climate change and how it's affecting us here. I think especially if you're talking hunting and fishing, it affects us, subsistence, it really affects us. So I hope people will get a better appreciation for what's happening and what we can all do to hopefully affect change or adapt to what is happening.
Okay, and Steve is online too. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I've worked with both Dave and Sue on these things, and I think it's really important to I'll turn the radio. Important to get together on things with people who really raise our consciousness about what's happening, how we might possibly work through the changes. It's important to discussion.
About how we might adapt to the changes? Is that what you said? You're breaking up a little bit.
Basically, yes. I think there's so many user groups, there's so much interest, but there's not a lot of awareness of the situation. And if we can talk about this, we can maybe come together on the possibility of maybe working through the obvious changes. I guess that's it.
Okay, and Sue, do you want to comment? First of all, what's your last name, Steve?
Steve Schoonmaker.
Hi, Steve Schoonmaker. Thanks for calling in. Sue, it sounds like you probably know Steve.
I do. Hi, Steve.
Okay. And can you respond to that prompt that that he's talking about? Were you able to hear him?
Yeah, so I think he's right that having understanding our local story to give us a place to begin a conversation about what we're going to do and how we can do it in a way that isn't going to just deepen some of the allocation battle, camps, I think is really important. I mean, we do all ultimately want to have healthy fish populations. I think that I feel safe in saying that.
Right.
Whether you're
commercial,
how you
sport,
get them. Yeah.
Subsistence.
Yeah. And, or if you don't even fish, even if you love them for their artistic beauty or their, you know, whatever it is, however you connect to the salmon, I think Alaskans are pretty comfortable in that space that we all really appreciate and honor the fact that they're part of our world up here. But with that comes some responsibility. And we all, I think part of the conversation will be to help people to understand where they fit into that story of responsibility. And it has to do with how we live on the landscape, how we interact with the river, how we sort of honor the resource when we get it, that we're not wasteful about it, how we support fish and game and make sure that we have a healthy department that can actually do the type of research and monitoring that allows them to manage those fisheries well. That there's a lot of ways for us to be part of this salmon system and that we have some responsibility to do that as Alaskans.
Well, well said, Sue Mauger. Thanks so much for being a part of the coffee table this morning. And I look forward to hearing the conversation this evening. Is there anything else that you want to add for this morning?
No, just appreciate, Kathleen, you giving us the opportunity to share this stuff and to the college. Really appreciate the continuing ed that Dave is helping to bring these opportunities forward for everybody. And there's lots of ways for us to be engaged, and I'm hoping that people are getting more and more comfortable in this virtual space, at least for the short term. And I look forward to seeing people in the participation list tonight.
Thanks.
On the Zoom. Thanks.
Thanks, Sue Mauger. And Steve Schoonmaker, do you feel like that addressed your concern, like the topic you brought up?
Yes, absolutely. We got to come together.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Dave Acheson, if there's anything you'd like to add to that, I think the time is right now for us to wrap up this invitation for people to participate tonight and next Wednesday. Do you feel like there's anything that's unsaid thus far?
Not really. That was a great way to kind of wrap up.
I thought so too.
I know Steve for a long time myself. He's a Prince William Sound commercial fisher, lifelong Alaskan, and cares
fisher
deeply
poet.
About...
Fisher poet, too.
And a fisher poet.
Yes. And so let's just briefly remind people about tonight, because then we're going to get on to the storytelling portion of the evening. So tonight at 6 p.m., is the Zoom meeting where fisheries are the discussion, and you've just heard from three of the people involved. There are a few other people who will be from commercial fishing and sport fishing interests local will be talking tonight. And if you want to be a part of it, all you have to do is go to Kenai Peninsula College's website, click on the event, which is the showcase series, and you can find a link so that you can be a part of the discussion or just sit in if you like. Have I got that about right, Dave?
That's it.
Okay.
Hope people stop by virtually tonight.
Great. And if the recording that's made is good enough, then we're going to air an edited version of tonight's discussion next Wednesday, and next Wednesday's discussion focusing on wildlife will be aired the following Wednesday on Coffee Table right here at this time. But now let's move on to you, Dave Acheson, because you are the evening coordinator at KPC, but you are also an author. And I have your latest book that I got from the Homer Bookstore called Dead Reckoning, Navigating a Life on the Last Frontier, Courting Tragedy on Its High Seas. But I don't know if you wanted to share a high seas adventure story, perhaps a nature story, something from your work. Can you talk about what you've chosen to read?
Sure. The book Dead Reckoning, you know, it's a memoir. Like a lot of people, I came to Alaska looking for adventure, and you know, almost 40 years ago, and I went commercial fishing. I had probably never even seen the ocean, and I went out with this crusty old skipper, and one of the other deckhands was wanted for questioning and a murder, and I buddied up to him because I was so terrified of the skipper. So
I'm not laughing at your misfortune. I'm just identifying, let's say.
It was rough. And then later on, once I was a seasoned commercial fisher, I went out on a boat, the Iliamna Bay, out of Homer, and we on the herring grounds and almost died, and we had to abandon ship, and it was a harrowing night, and the book documents that as well. But kind of in line with what we were talking about, most of writing, I really like to talk about the whole cycle of life, about how important nature is, and it's probably why we're having this discussion on climate change tonight. So I'm going to just read a little bit about just a little passage on when I was commercial fishing out in Prince William Sound. I set net with a family out there, and that was you know, just one of the better times in my life, I gotta say.
Okay, well, everybody settle in for a passage, a reading from Dead Reckoning, Navigating a Life on the Last Frontier, Courting Tragedy on Its High Seas, published by Skyhorse Publishing in, looks like, 2017?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Dave Acheson.
All right. So I was set netting out in Prince William Sound with a family called the Linville family, and Bob Linville was kind of the you know, he's the patriarch of the family, and I really respected the guy and learned a lot from him, and it was a big difference from that first boat I went out on. But anyway, so this is a little bit of just about why he was out there. I learned early on that the reason Bob set netted, the reason he made it his job, was because it allowed him to live here in Prince William Sound for months on end. Without it, he explained, we would have simply been passing through guests on vacation, not privy to the intimacies that living here can afford. Even the simple acts of daily life, gathering wood, building a fire, even doing the dishes needed to be done in time with nature, and took on an importance you wouldn't even consider in town, allowing you a glimpse into something profound. It is the very job itself that has granted us acceptance into an ancient ritual, a drama tied inextricably to the change of tide, the phases of the moon, and the seemingly miraculous return of the fish. It is a quickly fading life of individualism and reciprocity, and one that fishermen have led for generations. And that's from a chapter, The Cycle of Life, and that's just kind of a different theme that kind of runs through some of my writing, I think.
Nice. And so, you know, we have another 10 minutes. If there is any other passage that you'd like to read from Dead Reckoning, we'd love to hear it.
Sure. What I'd like to do is read something from Hidden Alaska.
Ooh, definitely, yes.
Bristol Bay and beyond. And that was my commercial fishing. And I'm going to read something like kind of similar, but like from the sport fishing perspective.
Also, it sounds like when you're starting to read, you're moving further from the phone or going into a different, like maybe speakerphone. So be sure to keep that phone or your mic as close to your mouth as possible.
Okay.
Thanks. Just a degree of added degree of difficulty.
Farther inland, as the mayhem of commercial fishing commences, a sometimes more subdued, but for the participant, just as important ritual occurs. It begins with a sorting of gear, the odor of old reel oil, and moldering hackle feathers, melding with the simple thoughts of sport fishing seasons long past. Perhaps it is a grandfather's streamside pipe smoke, or a random piece of sage advice that rises in memory with the stringing of new fly line in preparation to fish. Each year, fishermen walk the tundra, stepping over ankle-bending tussocks, finally rounding the top of any number of small knolls throughout this land, and being suddenly confronted by a maze of pothole lakes that blend into a vast panorama. Through this mesh of dense vegetation and interconnected waterways, there will likely lay a small stream. Even from a distance, a blazing streak of bright red runs through the otherwise flat tones of the midsummer landscape. On approach, it will become obvious it is a stream, red not from runoff or waste, but from the natural living wonder that epitomizes Bristol Bay. The wild salmon are so thick that if you were to step into the stream, it would likely cause a stampede, the ensuing wake enough to knock you off your feet. But these fish, long tired and weary from their journey, will not be a fisherman's target. It will be the trout, Dolly Varden, and grayling that stack behind them, ravenously slurping up any stray salmon eggs that might drift their way. Stationing themselves along the shore, most new fishermen will invariably stare in astonishment. They will cast almost by rote, completely taken by the distant mountains and greedily tasting the rich scent of willow and fireweed that spice the air. No telling how many casts they will lay out before it happens, their fly finally crossing a riffle and skirting the abyss of deep water, startling them out of their reverie with an incredible jolt. As line draws tight, the entire hole will erupt in a panic, as a single fish leaps, breaking the surface in a blast of scales and merging into a montage of black dots and a swirl of pink. In the intervening moments, amidst the sudden sweet panic of playing a large trout, time will rush to a standstill. Every aspect of the fisher's being will be tied for an instant to the stream through that fish. The blush of its gill plates, the silver and pleated curve of its back now embedded, along with perhaps the faint trace of a grandfather's pipe smoke in the current of his heart.
Well, thanks, Dave Acheson. And that is from Hidden Alaska, did you say?
Yes, Hidden Alaska, Bristol Bay and Beyond. And it's a book I did about 10 years ago with National Geographic photographer Michael Melford.
Oh, wonderful. And I love that image because anybody, the first time, it's true, the first time you see a carpet, a literal carpet of living salmon, it's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. And anybody who's like, especially, well, I mean, it's around here everywhere too. You know, you go to the Russian River or Quartz Creek or the streams of the Lower Peninsula, when the salmon are running, it's incredible. But Bristol Bay, too, is just, if people haven't visited, some of the streams there are just incredible as well.
Well, thanks so much, Dave Acheson, for sharing some sharing a short story. I appreciate it. And also for coming on Coffee Table to talk about the events for tonight and next Wednesday. It's all part of the Showcase series from Kenai Peninsula College. And anyone who wants to participate tonight can go to the webpage for Kenai Peninsula College, click on the Showcase Series heading, and right inside in the body of that story is a link to the Zoom meeting for tonight. And Dave, is there anything else you want to add before we start talking about, I start talking about the weather?
No, that's it. I really appreciate you having us on, and I'm looking forward to tonight. I'm really looking forward to Dr. Shane's and Sue Mauger's presentation. I saw little bits and pieces of it, so it's going to be very, very interesting.
Wonderful. And your techies are making a recording, and we'll do our best to get an edited version. And, you know, fingers crossed, you can never tell. I can never promise we're going to air a recording of something.
I would much rather do an in-person presentation where I pick somebody up at the airport, set chairs up, make coffee, than have all this technology going on.
Well, it's where we're living now. It's the stream we're in right now, Dave.
It is.
That's Dave Acheson, the evening coordinator, author and the evening coordinator for Kenai Peninsula College's Showcase Series. And also thanks to Sue Mauger, Executive Director and Science Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, and Dr. Eric Shane from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. You can hear them all tonight at 6 o'clock via Zoom. Find your link at the Kenai Peninsula College website. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. This has been The Coffee Table. Thanks, Dave. You have a terrific morning, and I look forward to hearing from you tonight. Bye-bye. Thank you.